Good morning. This is Rob Southgate from Southgate Media Group, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I will see you in the future.
Good morning. Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for September 18th, 2018. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflo.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, you could just watch the Weather Channel, right?
The Weather Channel. The Weather Channel, my favorite channel, because Steve, not only is it a hurricane, but it may be the worst ever.
Oh, their superlatives are just flowing on the Weather Channel.
For the Midwest, we had sunshine. The sunshiniest ever, Steve.
This is the best September weather we've ever had on the planet Earth.
Well, for the Midwest. For the East Coast, they're still dealing with rising rivers and things like that. The flooding that ends up happening, the swells that end up happening from that.
Yeah, some of the footage is just amazing.
Well, it is amazing. In fact, I talked to my brother who lives on the coast, and they had this big oak tree that the top of it fell. Mm. His neighbor moved his car to the middle of the street while the hurricane was going on, and the treetop fell right where his car would have been. Nice. So the guy saved his car from that. Well, how about that?
Wile E. Coyote style.
Oh, yes.
Big red X.
And then he had a tree fall from his neighbor's house in his backyard and missed his house. But it made it very difficult to get the dogs out, Steve.
Wow.
So there you go.
There you go.
There's a report from the field.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. As we told you last week, this week we are going to talk all about Castle Rock. This is the TV show on Hulu. It's 10 episodes. It wrapped up last week. So everybody who hasn't watched this show, please be aware we are going to spoil the heck out of the show right now. So if you haven't watched this yet, first of all, I really highly suggest that you watch this show.
This is a really good series and a great use. This is my favorite one I think I've seen this year as far as one of these series.
I posted on social media that one of the episodes of this show was the best hour of TV in the year. That says something. But I want to caution everybody, we are going to spoil this, so if you plan to watch this show, please fast forward like 7 minutes right now, because we're gonna spoil this.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead and hold a red balloon in my hand as we talk about this, because I don't want to give away any spoilers, Steve. But maybe there's something to do with it.
There's certainly a lot of little things that come from It, the story and the movie It in Castle Rock. The opening credit sequence has words from It and a picture of Pennywise.
Well, that should tell us something. In fact, as it's winding up, there seems to be nothing concrete. That's the whole thing I want to say. Nothing is concrete in this entire series.
Yes.
But you're getting echoes, you're getting like little hints, little winks.
Echoes is the best word that I've heard when we talk about this. This is the story of Stephen King's multiverse. This is the story of all of those stories that we've read and seen in movies from Stephen King, all living together, but at the same time, it's not those stories.
So you're also getting things like time travel.
Yes.
That play in this...
Am I smiling as wide as I possibly can smile at this point? You know how much I love time travel.
So you're jumping around through time.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, you're also getting alternate universes. So there you've got these both colliding. And the idea, in fact, Sissy Spacek's character, what you're finding in one of the shows is she's dropping off. She ends up getting a chess kit with all the chess pieces, and she ends up dropping them off everywhere, and everybody thinks that she's spacey, and
she's got dementia, she's suffering from Alzheimer's.
Well, we think that's what's going on.
Well, that's the diagnosis.
Yeah, but the reality is that her reality is she may not know which one she's in.
Maybe
she's always confused. And that's part of it, is because she is slipping between these realities. She's slipping in this time, and she's dropping these chess pieces off to kind of anchor her, or at least give her some idea of when this is.
It is her plan to be anchored to the now, to be sure of where she is in time, and that's what keeps drawing her back into what she believes is the reality of her situation.
Well, you've got to choose one.
Do you?
Well,
do you?
If you've got an infinite number of realities and you are you, it's hard to live them all. You've got to somehow anchor yourself somewhere.
Well, yes, I agree with you.
Because that was the reality we were watching. But part of the
series
ultimately ends up going to a different reality, and we get to experience a couple of those.
And it's such a great storyline. Henry Deaver, the main character of this whole story, is a young boy who gets, I don't know, kidnapped maybe in the first episode,
sure.
Gets found by Sheriff Alan Pangborn, and then is an adult 27 years later. Meanwhile, we've got this other kid who hasn't aged in 27 years. He was captured on that same day that Henry was found, and he's been in a cell for 27 years and hasn't aged a day. Then the story goes and switches those two characters.
And that's the amazing part of this story.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, let's go back to It real quick, the film that came out earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
It, 27 years, hibernates, right?
Correct.
So, the story, It, could just be another of the parallel universes.
Correct.
And the idea ultimately comes down to The Shining could exist with Cujo, mm-hmm. with Pet Sematary, with all those. But they could just be alternate universes of each other.
And echoed here in Castle Rock.
Correct, correct. And that's how I think they're all kind of pigeoning them all together, becoming one mega story, and all existing, but then again, being able to exist separately. So you're not so anchored into the universe that, you know, something's going to contradict something else. Well, you can always say it contradicts because it's an alternate universe.
And what brilliant writing that is. This 10-hour miniseries is full of all of those echoes. They say things like, go to Chester's Mill, which is the site of the Under the Dome book and okay. TV show. They say things, you know, they're reading the newspaper and there's an article about a rabid dog that attacks a family. The echoes are there without being just hit over the head with, oh, look, everyone, we're talking about Stephen King's stories now. This is brilliant writing.
Oh, this is wonderful. And Stephen King was involved in this.
Yes.
He was not originally involved, but asked to be involved.
Correct.
And he said, he was asked for his blessing
uh-huh.
and said, I'll give you more than my blessing. I'm going to be involved in this.
And thankfully, he is involved, and thankfully, he did not write the ending, because Stephen King cannot write an ending. There is no Stephen King story where it ends on the last page and I go, oh, good. The ending on this one is still pretty wide open. We still solve any of the mysteries, really.
In fact, we were talking about the ending and we were saying, well, did you see what I think I saw?
Aha!
And you said, well, maybe we saw that.
I think that the filmmakers were implying here that Bill Skarsgård, the actor who the actor who plays Pennywise the Clown in both of the It films, the Chapter 1 and the one that's coming soon, Chapter 2, he is this other mysterious figure in Castle Rock. And at the end of Castle Rock, there is this very slow pan over his face, very hidden in shadow, and his face looks very white, and it kind of looks like he's smiling a big grin at the end.
So is he the Joker, Steve?
Is he the Joker? Is he
Maybe he's
going to
fight Batman. You never know. That was Jared Leto.
Yeah, there's lots of Jokers.
Okay.
And Bill Skarsgård might be a clown of some sort, but he might not. That might just be an echo again where we, the audience, are going, oh yeah, remember when that guy looked like that? Because there's another moment where Bill Skarsgård's character has a monstrous face.
Yes, and that was and sort of a demon look.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, was that what really it looks like. We don't know.
We don't know that yet. We will find out probably in Chapter 2 what it really looks like. If you remember the TV series It from the 80s, there was a terrible, terrible CGI ending to that series where it was an awful monster that we just shook our heads at and turned off the TV.
Well, this looks really interesting. They've set it up for a season 2. I'm sure that's going to be announced if it hasn't been announced already.
It has been announced. They have greenlit a season 2. And in the end credits of the last episode, we see what possibly is the storyline for season 2.
Really?
Did you not?
I didn't catch that.
At the very end, after the credits start, there is a mid-credit roll where Jackie Torrance, the niece of Jack Torrance from The Shining, is sitting at her computer with her WKIT sticker on it, by the way. Have we talked about WKIT?
No.
WKIT is Stephen King's radio station that he operates in Maine.
Okay.
And so there's a little bit of advertising. She has a laptop with a sticker on it, and that sticker is for that radio station. She is writing a story called Overlooked. And another character walks in and says, "Overlooked? I don't get it." She goes, "It's a nod to the past." Because the Overlook Hotel was the hotel in The Shining.
That's right.
She is writing fiction, horror fiction, and she is planning to go to the Overlook Hotel to write her story.
Well, that seems interesting, Steve.
These echoes are throughout this series. I love the writing on this.
Well, this is wonderful. We highly recommend it. I would say 90 out of 100.
I absolutely agree with you. This is, I think, the best thing Hulu has put out. And that includes The Handmaid's Tale. I think this is better than The Handmaid's Tale. It is not as heavy as that story. This is a suspenseful, frightening story, but it's not about us nearly as heartily as The Handmaid's Tale is.
Sounds great.
Sissy Spacek needs to get an award for her acting in this. Her acting, especially in episode 7,
best Sally Field impression.
Oh. Ooh. Wow. That's a thing. I don't disagree with you. She certainly had a Sally Field sort of feel to her.
Oh, yeah.
Sally Field does time travel. That scene on the bridge with her and Molly where she says, you've never said that before. Because she's lived through this scene so many times, except for now it's changed. This is wonderful writing. I recommend this as highly as I can possibly recommend a TV show. You got the chance to see another Alan Pangborn story. You saw Needful Things from 1993.
Yes, I did, Steve. I got to see Needful Things. Mm-hmm. I was told this was a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so this came out in 1993, and let's just describe it in comparison to Castle Rock.
Oh, boy. I don't know that that's a good idea.
Definitely Needful Things was much hokier.
Sure, 1993.
And very much a product of its time, Steve.
Yes.
And while it had a wonderful cast, mm-hmm. it had Ed Harris in it.
He's the one who plays Alan Pangborn, right?
Yes.
The sheriff.
Yes. So anyway, Needful Things is a product of its time. I enjoyed seeing it. I have interest in reading this story.
Hmm.
Maybe we can do that for Halloween,
October
Steve.
Is coming.
That's right. Anyway, Needful Things was very good. But I'm going to say that this is ready for a remake. And my reasoning for it is that this is too much of a product of its time.
Yeah.
This the time, the shelf life of this one has passed. Even though this has a wonderful cast, it certainly is dated.
I would say that most of the Stephen King movies are ready for a reboot. I think the stories themselves are certainly stuck in a time, but most of them are reflective of a different time already, so they're kind of timeless. But making a movie out of those stories, they do get stuck in characters and clothing and cars and all of the things of the time.
Sort of the acting tendencies of the time, the the scares of the time. And that's what I got from this, is that it was kind of dated. Hmm. I'm very glad I got to see it, though. And I have interest in reading the book. It was recommended to me to read. They go, oh, you'll understand why the motivations of all this. Obviously, that's not the case that you'll see here. But it seems like maybe even a miniseries, maybe this miniseries format that Netflix and Hulu and the other streaming formats have certainly lend themselves to telling grandiose stories that do not have to be in a single 2-hour period.
Especially Stephen King's enormous stories. These books are huge, huge books, and trying to compact that down to a 90-minute story, it just doesn't work most of the time.
Well, let's just say, Steve, everything that you want, you can have at the store, but there's a price, Steve.
Yes. I have some things that I want, so I go to certain stores for things that I want. This weekend, I went to the Blue Box Cafe to get something that I wanted that I don't even know that I wanted before I knew about it.
So, ding, 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 Blue Box Cafe, who's been very, very good to us.
Absolutely. Chris is just wonderful. Go to the Blue Box Cafe in Elgin. It is a Doctor Who-based cafe. If you have any interest in Doctor Who or really good coffee or nice people, that's the place.
And most Fridays, there is some kind of Southgate Media Group event, along maybe during the weekend too. And so you went to the Southgate Media Group.
The king of our local podcast group, that's for sure. Rob Southgate puts on all sorts of fun performances. This Friday, he got together a group of actors from local Shakespeare companies.
Shakespeare, Steve! Shakespeare!
And they performed live at the Blue Box The Tragedy of Johnny and Lisa, a Shakespearean parody of The Room.
So The Room is that that movie that we got to see.
The Citizen Kane of bad movies. It is such a bad movie, but I can't stop talking about it. I can't stop watching it. There's something about Tommy Wiseau and the invention of this movie that is just, there's something special there.
Steve, there is he is a mysterious man.
Yes, he is.
With a mysterious movie. With all sorts of random scenes.
And random words. He wrote every word of it, and he's not the master of the English language, so some of the emotions are misstated in the film.
Steve. So tell me about the adaption as a Shakespearean thing.
So yes, this is brilliant. Young up-and-comer Kevin Johnson took the story of The Room and translated it into Shakespearean language. And
this was a live performance, a live reading.
Yes, this was a live reading, full cast live reading of this, and it was absolutely brilliant. I really believe that Kevin Johnson has a golden nugget here. If he took this and actually did rehearsals for a period of 6 months, did rewrites, he could put this on stage and people would go to a theater to see this performance.
Tommy Wiseau in the park. Come to your local downtown Chicago for Tommy Wiseau in the park.
It's an annual tradition.
As the Shakespeare troupe takes on The Room.
Oh my goodness. This was so much fun. The actors did such a great job. The actor playing Johnny just absolutely lit the place up with his acting.
All right, so there's this great scene in The Room where it's overacted. It's sort of like an ode to Rebel Without a Cause.
Correct.
And Steve, you had a Shakespearean buildup of this, wasn't it? It was really long.
It was really long. It was 3 minutes long of just this Shakespearean, so fast dialogue. It was reminiscent of like Hamilton-level rapping. This guy was throwing out these ideas so quickly, and there were so many of them, the audience started to get the hint of what he was getting at, and 3 minutes later, the payoff, "Thou art tearing me apart, Lisa!" It was brilliant.
Oh, how wonderful, man. This seems like ready to redo it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I mean re-perform it.
Yes.
It's the real challenge what we have with the newspapers, the way they've gone down, the way they have, and the lack of people getting to them, is trying to get the word out that something as wonderful, this was free to the public. Basically, you had to buy a coffee.
You didn't really have to buy coffee. This was free to the public. They were asking for donations, as the Southgate Media Group tends to do. They offer these to the public as a part of our culture.
Well, this is wonderful. In fact, it seems totally right to kind of redo this over and over and over.
Annual Tommy Wiseau in the park.
Well, and in fact, you could travel around the area.
No kidding.
Very similar to, it was a couple of years ago, one of the theaters downtown did Die Hard, a Christmas musical.
Correct.
So this is right in that vein.
Right there, ready for stage.
And as far as Shakespeare, there's been a lot of fun of writing Star Wars as a Shakespeare tragedy, Steve.
Yeah.
Anyway, this seems wonderful, and I'm so glad you got to experience
it. I am so glad that I rolled in and got a chance to see this. Thanks to the Southgate Media Group for putting this on. Thanks to the Blue Box Cafe for hosting this. Thanks to Kevin Johnson for writing this, because I think that he's got something here. And thanks to all of those actors from all of those different Shakespearean theater companies, the Edge Theater, Odds Bodkins, and the Unrehearsed Shakespeare Company, coming together to put this together. I look forward to seeing this again soon.
Maybe on Blu-ray, Steve.
Opening this week, we've got some movies that are coming out that look like something that we want to catch. The first one is called Love, Gilda. This is a documentary from the mouth of Gilda Radner. This is actual footage, actually Gilda Radner explaining her life to us.
All right, so if you don't know who Gilda Radner is, that means you're a young person.
Right.
And at one time, there was a show called Saturday Night Live.
There still is. It's on four years this year?
Oh, it could be. But anyway, it was at one time very new.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in the mid-70s.
Mm-hmm.
And Gilda Radner was one of three women who starred in the opening cast.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, when I say the gem, that's not really fair. They were all wonderful in their own way. But mm-hmm. Gilda Radner had, she was like America's sweetheart.
She really was.
And so there are many characters.
Mm-hmm.
That we all know. When we talk about Bill Murray and Gilda Radner, when they're being the nerdy people, giving each other noogies and all the other
going out
stuff.
On their date, yes.
Oh, yes.
Rosanna Dana.
That's right. Oh, never mind. Never we don't talk mind. About the presidential erection. Gilda, I think you misunderstood that. I'll say, this election. Never mind.
I use the joke from that character all the time when I'm at school and somebody walks in with a violin, and I always say, oh, I thought we were trying to eliminate violins in school. No, that's violence. Oh, never mind. I loved Gilda Radner, and this documentary is something that I'm going to find a way to see.
Well, we're going to get a firsthand experience from a lot of the people who worked with her,
mm-hmm.
along with some people who were inspired by her. But one of the things I'm really interested in is Gene Wilder is also being interviewed. And Gene Wilder, who is certainly as beloved as Gilda Radner,
mm-hmm.
they had a really special relationship.
They really did.
And we're going to get some insights into how much they loved each other and sort of what they got to experience out of life.
What we experienced from the outside, seeing the two of them together, we saw a true love story. And I look forward to what this documentary can add to that data from that relationship, because it was a beautiful relationship.
Now, did she always date Willy Wonka?
I think so.
Okay.
I think you should, once you go Willy, you don't go Billy. I don't know how that goes. There's another movie coming out this week. It's called The House with a Clock in Its Walls. This is another Jack Black being silly, making a children's movie.
Well, Jack Black is silly.
Yes, he is.
And a very charming person.
Yes.
And because he's such a charming and silly person, he can really carry these type of films. This, to me, looks very Spielberg-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like maybe... yeah, definitely made for young people.
It's very reminiscent of the Goosebumps movie that he made a few years back, where he played R.L. Stein in a Goosebumps movie and just was very frenetic and very slapstick, falling down a lot. That's Jack Black, and I look forward to watching that in this movie as well. There's a movie called Life Itself coming from Amazon Studios. This is a pretty standard romantic drama. It looks beautiful.
Steve, there's a lot of strumming guitar and a lot of misty, teary moments. I mean, because life happens.
And an all-star cast in this one. You've got Oscar Isaac, Olivia Wilde, Annette Bening, Mandy Patinkin, of course, Jean Smart, and Olivia Cook, and Antonio Banderas.
Well, there you go. I don't think anything special other than these wonderful actors.
It looks beautiful. The trailer looks like a beautiful story. I'm sure it's going to do well.
Heartwarming. What can we say? All right, so I'm going to go ahead and give him a C for effort. Here we go.
The next movie is kind of the opposite of that. The next movie is called Fahrenheit 11-9. This is the latest documentary from Michael Moore.
Alarmist Michael Moore will be talking about something.
He's afraid of something, and he's going to make a documentary about it.
I don't know. I get back and forth on whether to take him seriously or not, but obviously he doesn't like Donald Trump, which is, a lot of people don't.
Sure.
In fact, I was downtown on Friday, right, and I'm walking by Trump Tower, and of course there's a protest going on. But at this point, you just kind of block it out and say life goes on.
I agree with you.
We got another, year and a half or whatever it is.
Or less.
You never know. But my point is that... life goes on, Steve.
Yes, this is another documentary. Michael Moore is sharing his experience with us. I enjoyed his original documentary, Roger and Me, where he had something to say about his hometown, Flint, Michigan, and he had a very powerful message about what was happening on a very personal level. Mm-hmm. Now I'm not sure that he's talking on a personal level with this film. Possibly. Maybe it is. I will give it a chance, but I'm not going to seek this one out. Book it. Brings us to our book it, our book of the week. I love reading science fiction, Chip. Have I mentioned that in the last 5 years?
Steve likes science fiction. Where did that come from, Steve?
Wow. I enjoy reading stories about creatures from other planets, interactions between cultures. I enjoy all sorts of different stories. So I decided to pick up a new book. This is a 2018 book called Space Opera by Catherine Valente. This is a very...
American Idol.
The idea of this story is based on something called Eurovision. Are you familiar with Eurovision?
I think our listeners need to have a refresher on Eurovision, Steve.
I don't think any of our listeners watch Eurovision. They might be aware of it. Eurovision is an annual singing contest where they bring together one group from each of the European countries and they have a challenge to see who is the best singer, the best band, the best musician in Europe annually. This is huge in Europe.
To me, that seems to benefit the large countries, Steve.
Yes, I think you're right.
I would say that France and Germany and England, I should say Great Britain, probably have a greater chance than, say, some of the smaller countries.
Like Switzerland and Poland and even smaller countries that keep changing names every decade or so.
Sure.
Yes. This is kind of a nationalism kind of competition, sort of like the Olympics, and it is treated like the Olympics in Europe.
So tell us how that plays into... This is American Idol, Steve.
One of the things about Eurovision that I'm concerned about is the differences in culture and language. If you're going to explain to me that this is the best music we have available, but I don't understand what it means...
Maybe they're speaking a different language.
Yeah.
Maybe they have movements or something like that that are unique to their group. The robot may be so American, but maybe it doesn't translate well over in Germany.
And comparing those things seems problematic to me. This is the idea that Catherine Valente came up with. What if there was an intergalactic singing competition where someone from every planet in the galaxy comes together and they all sing and we judge based on our idea of musicality, which is the best?
Well, we saw a version of that with Palpatine and young Anakin watching an opera on
I was thinking more of the Fifth Element, where the alien singer is singing, and everyone's going, oh, yes, that's lovely. But the idea of this contest is there are high stakes. This is the Hunger Games meld into this.
Of singing?
The Hunger Games.
Are they
going to
kill the losers?
The team that gets the fewest votes, that planet is destroyed at the end of this contest.
Oh, good Lord, man. Who would agree to this?
Well, you don't really have much choice, is the way the story goes, is the alien invaders are going to come and destroy your planet, or you can be a part of this contest and sing for your life.
Oh, good Lord.
This is not a bad story. I enjoyed this
story.
Play it safe. It's safe.
It sounds like it's going to be a boring contest because everyone's going to say, listen, just don't be bad. Don't be the worst.
Well, don't be the worst. That's what it comes down to, is don't be the worst. So the Earthlings who are involved in this are trying to find the best songs they can from Earth's history to sing. And they try to meld together all of the best of the best from Earth in order to win this contest, or at least not lose.
Maybe they play John Williams' Close Encounters theme. You never know, Steve.
Go. That might get some aliens' attention. This is a good book. I enjoyed it very much. I did get caught up in the names. I think the author here
Son of Thray.
I think she was trying a little bit too hard to make this sound spacey. Okay.
Lots of X's, Steve. Lots of K's.
Lots of hard to pronounce names was the thing that I got wrapped up in. I do that often with stories, and I did have that with this. I was intrigued by the first chapter. The first chapter, the title is Boom Bang a Bang. And I thought, that's a really weird chapter title.
Well, you figured out a connection with that. Tell us of that connection.
Well, I happen to be going through Big Finish this week, which is the audio group that does Doctor Who audios, and I found a...
Of course, Steve. Of course.
As I am apt to do.
Of course.
And I found a recording from 2002, a Doctor Who episode called Bang, Bang, a Boom. And I thought, well, there you go. Catherine Valente stole it from Doctor Who.
Of course. I mean, we all ran to that conclusion. Thank you for pointing that out to us.
Well, the story of this Doctor Who episode is very similar in structure. It is an intergalactic singing contest where the Doctor is actually the judge of this singing contest. And, of course, Intergalactic War, of course, is the result of the singing contest. So I did a little searching and found out that there is a song called Boom Bang a Bang, which was the British winning song in the 1969 Eurovision contest.
Of course.
That's the seed where all of this started.
Regis, I'd like to phone a friend.
The useless information is kind of my middle name, Chip.
Exactly.
Especially when it comes to sci-fi and Doctor Who.
For $1,000.
For $1,000. Name a doctor.
I'd like to phone a friend.
This is a good book. I do encourage you, if you like a lot of interesting science fiction, if you are interested in Eurovision or song contest, like American Idol. This is very similar to American Idol, only it's annual instead of all of the time. I can only watch so many auditions in my life. This is a good story. It's called Space Opera by Catherine Valente. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
How wonderful.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. You know, this week I tortured some of my students and we watched the live Apple event in class, and then we watched the 10-minute edited version of it the next day so that the kids were well informed about what Apple was doing.
So, Steve, this is not Steve Jobs' company.
No.
This is a totally different Apple. Steve, it's new.
I'll agree with you. And one of the things the new Apple company does is they offer us way more choices than Steve Jobs would have ever allowed.
Steve's like a man of three, Steve.
Yes, he was.
He liked three.
Yeah, 3 is a magic number. We have 5 different models of iPhone that will be available for the fourth quarter, so just in time for your holiday shopping. They're leaving the iPhone 7 on the market, reducing the price to $449. The iPhone 8 is being reduced to $599, and they introduced 3 new models. The iPhone XR at $749, the iPhone XS at $999, and the slightly larger and slightly more ridiculous iPhone XS Max at $1,099.
Well, Steve, $1,100.
Wow.
That's the price of a computer.
This is a computer in so many ways. They demonstrated so many of the capabilities of this thing. It is a 64-bit chip with more capabilities than most of our laptops. I think it's better than this laptop that we're using for the show, actually.
Isn't that amazing? I wonder if you're going to be able to like hook up a monitor to it.
Sure.
And just run it as a computer. I mean, it's at this point, mm-hmm. it's powerful. It's powerful enough to run Pages and get to Google Docs.
Everything. Anything that you're doing short of video editing or audio editing, although you can do both of those things on this device, mm-hmm. the screen is just not quite capable of that. But anything that you can imagine, you can do with this phone, and so many things that you've never imagined. The machine learning that they've built into the new operating system, iOS 12, can do things that seem like magic. I had a student who said out loud while we were watching this, "That's impossible. You can't do that." And I said, well, here's the evidence. Here is this guy saying he has done it with this device.
Well, the sweet spot looks like that if you're looking for the latest technology is going to be this iPhone XR.
Mm-hmm.
$750, Steve. That's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money, but it is certainly less expensive. And that's one thing that Apple does really well is they bring out this ridiculously expensive.
This one's $1,100.
And you go, I can't afford that. And they go, well, just wait. What can I do to get you into this phone today? Look at this one that's almost as impressive, and it's $350 cheaper.
And still a lot of money.
Still quite a lot of money for a phone.
Think about that. You have a person of four family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're talking $3,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we're all getting new phones. It's $3,000, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Holy
but
cow.
On the flip side, how many laptops are you buying this year? The number is probably really close to zero.
Yeah, that is correct.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to, our laptops, we get a little long in the tooth.
Yes, they are.
But I use an iPhone 6, so it's getting, I mean, it's still being supported.
Mm-hmm.
And my assumption is it will be supported probably for the next year.
I would think that that's about right. They have about a 5-year window on supporting the operating systems.
And so I would say even if you got an iPhone 7, if you were upgrading,
mm-hmm.
and you're probably getting another 4 years, 3 years of support out of
it. I agree with you on that. So there's certainly some value in that iPhone 7.
And what ends up happening, in my opinion, is that the operating systems still work,
mm-hmm.
but they just start slowing down. I mean, eventually the battery just starts wearing.
That's true. That is a part of this whole experience, is our society, where all of this stuff is disposable, it's still very expensive to dispose of it. So the thing that really got me, the phones are lovely, but what really got me was the new capability of the Apple Watch. This is a $400 watch to start.
This is the Apple Watch 4.
Correct. Series 4. What this features is amazing to me. It is the world's first direct-to-consumer EKG, electrocardiogram. This watch can measure your heart rhythm and tell you whether or not you have heart health.
So, Steve, I just had my physical last week,
mm-hmm.
and what did we do? We did an EKG.
Uh-huh.
So the deal is I can have an EKG, even if it's not the greatest one, still on my wrist.
A reasonable, FDA-approved, American Heart Association-certified EKG on your wrist all day, every day.
That's $400.
That is very expensive. That is a huge amount of money. But the value of that might be even more.
Well, I may end up getting a new watch.
I
don't have an Apple Watch.
You haven't had a watch for a long time.
I haven't had one for a long, long time.
But the capabilities of this thing might even supplant the capabilities of your phone. If you get the one with cellular, you might not need a phone.
Well, in fact, I was thinking about that with the new earbuds and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We're almost at a point where they're powerful enough they could replace your phone.
It's amazing.
And that may be what ends up happening. That may be the future, is that, you know, this new phone you should buy may be the last one you buy.
Mm-hmm.
The new one may be on your wrist.
Wow.
Especially if Siri could mishear and misunderstand anything I say. I mean, that's going to be great for me to be able to tap my ear.
That is the one thing that I keep thinking about when I think about I'm going to switch back to iPhone from Android, is Siri doesn't work.
And well, try having a Southern accent, Steve.
I tell you, it is a conundrum. I am going to keep an eye on this. I think I might wind up with an Apple Watch because
I'll have
of
the
this.
Italian beef. No, I'm sorry. My Southern accent.
Okay. I didn't know what that was. When we talk about all this stuff, we do talk about distracted driving. We have these ubiquitous phones that have so much information.
All right, so they're wonderful. The what a phone can do today for mm-hmm. us is wonderful. But we recently, and not too far from where we're recording right now,
mm-hmm.
there's a city out there, Sycamore, Illinois, where a driver who I'm guessing was texting was at a stop sign. And the local high school was running across the street, cross country, doing a little training. She ran into three of them.
Yeah. That's terrifying. That is where we're at with all this.
All right. So she did not stop, kept going. There was a bystander who pulled out a phone and snapped and got the license plate and the car.
And then the police were able to find her, track her down, and cite her with violations.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we're luckily no one was hurt. But I mean, the next day or the day after this happening, there was a gentleman who was hit on the highway coming out of Chicago and went to the hospital. My guess is that it was similar. Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody's, you know, texting or using their phone or whatever.
It's an epidemic. This distracted driving is such a problem in our society right now that we need to solve this in some way.
Well, we do, and obviously we have a lot of voluntary stuff you can do. I drive a lot. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to a lot of music mm-hmm. and books on tape. I try very hard not to be to have stuff loaded up mm-hmm. so that, you know, I'm pressing play. But still, I mean, that's certainly not the answer. That's truly illegal.
Right.
And, I mean, we just saw there's two examples of things
locally.
Of negative could happen. And yeah. one example of a person being able to pull out the phone and snap a picture.
And there's the dichotomy, is the wonders of this phone, having that ability to take that picture and get that resolved mm-hmm. is echoed by the maybe she was not paying attention because she was paying attention to that phone and that caused the problem.
All right, so Steve, let's get to the next thing. The Weather Channel certainly warned us.
Yes.
It was Armageddon, and if this will survive...
Les Nessman reporting.
That's right, if this will survive, you know, being released on Tuesday.
Uh-huh. Yes, Hurricane Florence has battered the East Coast in the U.S. It's going to be a long process of cleanup and recovery in that one, because there's so much water on the East Coast.
Well, we got a lot. It hit North Carolina and South Carolina pretty hard,
mm-hmm.
Particularly eastern North Carolina, the lower southeastern North Carolina, and northeastern South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And so Myrtle Beach to Wilmington up to New Bern. I've got lots of friends who live in these areas. I got lots of Facebook feeds of mm-hmm. This is my backyard and this is my car, you know, underwater.
Yeah. It's amazing how much water has fallen. I hope that everybody is going to be safe. I hope that we're not going to hear too many tragic stories from this.
We've already, as a recording, have 7 deaths recorded. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there'll be more.
Yeah.
We have a number of groups that have traveled to the area mm-hmm. to try to rescue people. I mean, obviously, some people did not heed the warning to evacuate.
Right.
and decided to stay home. And it could be for any number of reasons. They don't have enough money. They don't have a place to stay.
They're immobile for some reason. Yeah.
For whatever reason. Yeah. We do have those groups. Tell us a little bit about the Cajun Navy, Steve.
The Cajun Navy is my new favorite thing. I heard about this group from Louisiana. They have traveled to all of the big storms for the last decade. And the Cajun Navy is in North Carolina helping people. They've got boats. They've got inflatable beds. They're trying to help people as much as they possibly can, while at the same time trying to stay out of the way of emergency services. They are good Samaritans who are very conscientious to think about if they're in the way, to get out of the way.
So every July 1st, as I normally do, I turn to North, to our friends in Canada.
Canada Day.
And thank them for giving us the Arcadians. And sending them down to Louisiana to give us that wonderful food.
There you go.
And obviously that wonderful accent that they have.
And some very heartfelt people who go out and help people. I wish that I had the resources to go and actually help. I wouldn't be much of a help. I would be in the way more than I could actually help.
All right. So I can give you some background on that. There was a hurricane probably 10, 15 years ago that happened in North Carolina, and it went inland, probably 2 to 3 hours inland. And my mother and her friends, they organized and they went up and they helped do some of the cleanup. And they had an incredibly good experience from that.
Sure.
Because they had such a fulfilling experience, and certainly we're not seeing tragedy is the reason why you can't give, but I'm just saying that when tragedy happens, to be able to go and help, you know, obviously can fill you up in many good ways. They were able to organize these same groups. They went down to Katrina and helped clean up down there. And in fact, they had such a good experience down at Katrina, they went back for a second time. So my point is that if you have time, if you have means, a lot of retirees do this. Mm-hmm. They'll go and they become the savior for some families.
That's
for the
beautiful
communities.
There's some beautiful stories that come out of these sort of tragedies. I remember, of course, Mr. Rogers coming out and saying, always look for the helpers. Whenever there's something terrible that's happening, look for the helpers. The helpers are there. We come together as a society to help. And you can help in your way.
And you can, you know, follow Kanye West, what he says.
I'm not sure that helped.
I think Mike Myers certainly was kind of shocked by that.
He was absolutely shocked. If you look at those of you who have no idea what we're talking about, look that up. Mike Myers and Kanye West. Kanye says things, doesn't he?
He can say things.
He can say things. We can say things, too. We've got some great stuff coming up. Join us on Saturday, September 29th, for the 4th annual Southgate Media Group podcast marathon that is back at the Blue Box Cafe in Elgin, Illinois. We are going to be there early in the morning because we are early morning people.
Because we're old guys.
Because we're old people.
And all the young people will show up later.
And wonder who those old guys are that are walking out the door while they're walking in. Yeah.
So we're there with all the customers getting their coffee for the morning, having their sandwiches.
It's still a wonderful process. This is a podcast marathon. You can find all the list of all the shows on southgatemediagroup.com and come on out and support us on Saturday. It's just 11 days away.
Exactly. Yes. It's going to be exciting.
It's always exciting. We always have a good time. We always have some surprises. So come on out. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Yep, we definitely are coming back next week. And then the other marathon is starting. The Doctor Who marathon starts next Tuesday. As we prepare for the new Doctor, the 13th Doctor, who will arrive a few days thereafter.
She's falling, Steve. How long has she been falling?
Oh, she's been falling for a year and a half. It's going to be exciting. Come on out to the podcast marathon. We'll talk all about it. If you need information between now and then, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Send us an email. We're at toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our new site, news.toomuchscrolling.com. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
We'll see you in the future. What I wanna talk about is what I wanna think for, what I wanna